Hello, everybody. It's Marilyn Harris of Hard at Work, and we're creating an impact today. And my guest today is Yvonne, and I'm going to let her introduce herself in a minute here. But I just want to welcome everybody. And if you haven't liked or subscribed or shared the channel before or our speakers or the people that I interview, please do so. They can so much appreciate it, and it'll help me increase my subscriber base. So, Yvonne, thank you for joining me today. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got into what you're doing right now?
Well, it all started when I became a classroom teacher, married and met the man of my life, moved across the state of Pennsylvania, and found no teaching positions. But luckily, I had a second master's degree in clinical psychology, which led me into employee assistance work, into management consulting and training, to being a vice president of human resources for a while, and then retiring and thinking I was going to sit back. But that didn't happen because I wrote a book.
Oh, great.
And so in retirement, I have become an author of not just one book, but two.
Very good, very good. Yeah, we I don't know how people say I'm going to retire and I'm going to do nothing. I mean, like I think what the most of the people I have spoken to have retired out realize their buddies are still working. They have no more golf buddies, and then they gain 30 pounds and they think, okay, what am I going to do? So they either go to back to work part time or they find something to do, right? And for your case, you decide to write a book. So I know you already shared with me about what one of the books is about, but tell me about the story of how that book came about.
Well, the first book really started back in 2008. And my elderly father lived on the western part of the state of Pennsylvania, and I live on the east. And our general communication was that weekly phone call, sometimes more than once a week. And on this one January dark Sunday, after the football game was over, I was talking to Dad, and he told this quirky, funny, off-the-wall story about World War II. And I said to him, I said, "Let me get a pad and pencil. I want to take notes." His actual response to me was, "What the hell do you want to do that for?" I said, "Well, this is really interesting. I think that this is something that the family would like to know." So, as an avid historian or historical buff, the next week I said, "Dad, if you're willing, start at the beginning." And he did. And story after story after story rolled off of his tongue. And once I was kind of into it, I thought, this is something that could be published because it wasn't D-Day, it wasn't Eisenhower, it wasn't any of the big names or the big battles. It was just how an ordinary GI got into the service when he never would have had to have gone. And so that's what led me to 11 years later getting it published.
Yeah, it's a good stories for the family to have, like a remembrance of their father or the man in that family about what stories they could tell and sh they're willing to share, right?
It was very much like that. But there was an upside to the stories in that I got to know my father in a brand new way. And he got to know me in a brand new way. The result of which that the relationship that I had always wanted to have with him was the one that I got. And he trusted me enough to wait for me to get home to be with him on his final journey. And that, above all things else, if there's just one thing that that book helped me to achieve, was being with him on that sacred journey.
So tell me a little bit about that story, because I think that's what your other book is about being with dad, right?
Yeah,
So,
Flying with Dad is the first, and Dying with Dad is the second. The readers of Flying with Dad were sort of kind of interested in the World War II stuff. But the comments I was getting was, "How could you let him go? Even if you were honoring his do not resuscitate order, how could you do that?
Right.
And what happened between Dad and I is that my working in a retirement community in the end, I knew about advance directives. So I made sure that Dad and I visited an attorney and we did that. However, as a part of being in that a retirement community, I came across another document called the Five Wishes. And that's a document that is an advance directive with heart. And when I saw that, I said, I've got to go further. I need to sit down and have this discussion with Dad. So, with a great deal of trepidation, I drove across the state one time, document in hand. Dad was in the hospital once again, but I said, there's something else I'd like to talk to you about. And he turned in his hospital bed so that his feet were dangling off the edge of the bed. And I sat down beside him in this wonderfully warm spot that he had created. And I opened up the five wishes, and he just went with me and answered all the questions. No, I don't want that. Yes, I do want that. Beyond the healthcare stuff, how did he want to be remembered? He wanted to be remembered for his work with the Red Cross. And I said to him, and I said, well, what about World War II? His response is, well, yeah, that too. He said he wanted to be remembered as a good father. And I said, so one of the questions was, what do you want your children to know? So we talked about that. What do you want for a funeral? And he was very explicit. Dad was Roman Catholic. He wanted a high mass. He wanted my husband to sing. My husband has a glorious tenor voice. He wanted Amazing Grace, the Lord's Prayer, and the Ave Maria. And because he knew I was taking vocal lessons, not to be a soloist, but to be better at singing in a choir, he said, and you will sing too. So we did all of that. He also said, this was funny, but he said, and you know that part of the funeral service where people get up and talk about you? I don't want that. If they haven't said it to my face, then they better not be saying that to me at the funeral. So I said, okay, Dad. So that was in the five wishes. So that's the basis of it. These extensive questions. If he was in a coma, how did he want to be treated? If he could be brought back and have quality of life, yes, he wanted that. But if he was going to be a vegetable, he wanted to go. So it was all very clearly stated. So when I went home, 2.5 hours after I got there, Dad was on the floor. And not being a nurse, I called 911. The EMTs arrived. I showed them the five wishes, and they said, we need something other than that, though I now believe that that wasn't true. But I knew that there was a DNR, do not resuscitate, on his hospital, so I called the hospital. And perhaps 2 minutes after that call, the emergency room doctor called and said, you can stop working. So I laid down beside my dad. I put my arm over his chest. I talked to him. I told him I loved him. I told him I knew he was going to be with mom, which was what he had said he wanted. And then I said the prayer that had been the family glue, and that was the Lord's Prayer. And the phone rang, and I got up to answer it. And when I came back, I took one look on the EMT's faces, and I could tell Dad was gone.
They always want to leave, when we're not around. But the treasure, you get to still treasure the moments that you get to spend with them at the end, right?
And Dad was pretty funny. He loved a good joke, loved a good joke and a story. And he said, frequently, I want to go out of my house feet first. So here are the EMTs putting Dad up on the gurney. He's going out of his home feet first. They set the gurney down at the back of the ambulance. And I was going to go in the ambulance because he was being taken to the hospital to be pronounced.
Right.
The snow is coming down an inch an hour. We're in northwestern Pennsylvania.
Right.
And I looked down at my dad's face, the light from the back of the ambulance shining on it. And there was this soft, sweet, beatific smile. And it said to me everything I needed to know. He
Right.
was where he wanted to be. He was with my mother. And it happened in just the way he wanted.
Wow. Yeah. And that you were to get to be bear witness to all of that.
Absolutely. And I say frequently, I don't grieve the loss of my father in the
Right.
same way that I grieve the loss of others. Do I miss him? Last night I was in tears, even after all these long years of missing him. But beside that kind of ache, there is this joy, this absolute sacred joy that I could be with him and I could orchestrate following exactly what he wanted.
So is that when you wrote your book after that or before that?
After that. And actually, the whole story that I just told you is in the first book. And so, readers of the first book, having read that, say, how could you do that? And so, dying with Dad is my own personal journey of being comfortable talking about death and dying. By the time I was in my late 20s, I had lost, the family had lost 17 significant others to death by suicide, one a murder outside Central Park. The very, I'm trying to find a word for it, I'll just go and say, my brother. We lost my brother when he was 26. He was in an automobile accident. So, my story of what happened along the way to eventually make me comfortable talking not just to Dad, but to others and to writing the book. Working in a nursing home, I would have residents approach me and we'd be having a quiet chat, and they would say, Yvonne, I want to go. And I would say, tell me about it. And they'd open up with being tired and missing their friends and missing their loved ones and not feeling like they had a purpose or work to do. And they were just tired and ready. And oftentimes in the nursing home, the response to, I just want to go, was met with, oh, please don't say that. We really love you and we want you here, or something that would shut the conversation down. But in my case, I didn't feel the need to do that. I wanted them to just be able to say what it was like to tell the story. So having those experiences, also being a psychotherapist, I had a client one time who was acutely ill. And she would come from time to time with depression. And we would do tune-ups, and I wouldn't see her for a year. And then she would come back. But I began to wonder, am I really doing any good for her? Am I really helping? So I posed my question to the presenter at a conference. And he said to me, Yvonne, you only have to ask her one question. And I said, well, what's that? And he said, ask her, what do you want to do? How do you want to live until you die? And I was like blown away. So I'm thinking, if she comes back, how do I ask her that question? It's such a pointed thing. How do you do that? Well, she came back. And we talked about things, and I'm sitting in my chair and I'm stewing and I'm thinking, I need to ask the question. Do I ask the question? How do I ask the question? So I did. First response was, She broke out in belly laughter. And she said, "That's the best question you've ever asked me."
Wow.
So when she would come back after that for tune-ups, that's where our discussion went.
Right.
How do you want to live until you die?
Right.
And so we would get into the kinds of things that she could be doing to keep the normal depression not at bay, but at a level where she could deal with it, or
Right.
at a level where she could feel like
Right.
it wasn't all hopeless. And she ended up joining an orchestra, volunteering at her church to be the receptionist,
Yes.
dealing with her nieces in a really profound kind of way. She found those kinds of things that kept her going until she passed away.
Right. Yeah, that's just really where it's at, right? It's just thinking about that simple question, but powerful question.
Powerful question.
Yeah.
So those kinds of experiences were what really helped me to be at that place with my father
Right.
when I needed to open up that conversation.
Right. Yeah.
So
Yeah.
that's what dying with dad is all about.
Yeah, I think it's so important that we have these poignant conversations, whether it's with our parents or siblings or even friends, you know, like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to talk about it, or you know, this is a morbid subject, you know, and that type of thing. It's just like incredibly challenging, but I think people still walk away thinking about, why did you ask me that question? What do I really want? You know, and maybe they're willing to come back to you and have a conversation with you about that topic.
Well, two things have happened since the writing of the book. An older gentleman that I had known read it, and he came back to me and said, "It never occurred to me that this is something my kids might want."
Right.
And he literally ordered the five wishes. And
Wow.
on his birthday,
Yeah.
there was a Zoom conversation because his children were all
Yeah.
over the country. That's what he talked about. And when he went through it, he brought up some things because he just wanted to make his end be easy for his kids.
Right.
And they were able to say, "Hey, wait a minute, Dad. What about this? What about that? We'd really like to do that for you.
Right.
I don't want to be a bother." "No, Dad,
Yeah.
we'd really like to do that for you." So he's going back and editing his five wishes. In another case, a younger woman said, "Every time my parents bring it up, I say, I don't want to talk about it." And she said, "Now, since reading your book, we're having those conversations." So the purpose for writing the book is being accomplished and achieved.
Right.
That those who read it think about these conversations in a whole new way.
Yeah, because they all have to be said. It has to be expressed, you know, so the people that who care about them know what their wishes are, and you don't end up with two or three people, well, dad didn't say that and mom didn't say that, or you know, that type of thing happening, right? Because they
Well,
just
that
don't.
actually happened.
Right.
Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
When we got to the priest office to plan the funeral, my older brother said, "Oh, gee, Father, I really don't know how this goes. What do we do?" And I said, "Remember the five wishes. This is what Dad wanted. This is one, this is two, this is three, this is four." And the priest planned that funeral
Yeah.
around all of those things.
Right.
Because my father had had these conversations and because he had buried my mother, when the funeral home thing was all paid for,
Right.
he had done some kind of a financial thing that it was all taken care of.
Right.
So we as children could not relax, but at least we could be present in the funeral and in the viewing. in a way that we wouldn't have been able to in
Before.
any other way.
Right. Yeah, because that's another component to it, right? Figuring all that out and where do you want your body to go and how do you want it to end in that aspect besides your spirit. Your spirit moves on. It doesn't care anymore about the body, but it still needs to be disposed of, right? So yeah, absolutely a great conversation. Yeah, I think what you bring to the table, Yvonne, in this conversation is an opportunity for people to take a look at the five wishes, an opportunity to sit down and think, okay, what do I want? Because we all have to do our own, not just what our parents want or what our siblings want, but what do we want, and go from there.
Mine are done.
Yeah.
And mine differ, and my children know them.
Yeah.
Mine differs a little bit from the document because it says when you're in the room with someone who is dying, keep the conversation pleasant,
Yeah.
that kind of thing. And I said, no, cry.
Okay.
This is a hard time for you.
Yeah.
And know that my spirit is with you in your tears.
Right.
So I was able to say that very clearly.
Right.
In doing mine.
Right. Yeah, because they just sort of, it's sort of stressed, just as being a doula, is that at the end, you don't want any fighting or bickering amongst everybody when the person is passing. So they're just saying, like, take that out of the room and have a conversation outside that. But yeah, absolutely. Like if you need to cry, you cry. And if you need to, weep or, why you, like whatever. But it's really about just keeping the conversation and going and making it peaceful so the pe person may pass on more peacefully and holistically, right?
And I've said to my children, if there's something that I've done to hurt you, tell me about it.
You're right.
And know that I'm saying that I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And in the same breath, if there's something that you want me to know in a way of an apology or something, tell me,
Yeah.
so that the air is cleared
There.
for the both of us.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Because the energy level is so much different in that room, in that space. And hopefully you've had those conversations before that time, but if you haven't, then you know that that space is clear and it's peaceful. Yeah. Yes. I'm so glad we had this conversation, Yvonne. I'm so looking forward to hearing more about your stories and how you're helping people. It's so important. It's very important work you're doing. So thank you.
Thank you. It's a privilege. And
Yes.
thank you for having me.
Hey, you're welcome. It's been fun. I've been enjoying listening to somebody who's totally immersed in what you're talking and what you're saying about. Totally. Anyway, thank you everybody for joining us today. And Yvonne's information will be down below if you want to reach out to her and have your story told. I'm sure she would be happy to write it. So anyway, take care. Okay, bye-bye.